Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it's the Weekender. It's John Gibbons. I'm here to host in the absence of Neil Atkinson. I'm joined by Josh Sexton, by Mo Stewart, and by Kiva O'Neill. I always struggle with your name, though. You know, Josh.
It's hard, isn't it? Because the shirt and then the sun.
Yeah, when Josh I'm doing Sexton. When I'm doing Moments in Time and I'm doing my serious voice, I have to do it about seven times. Josh Sexton.
I feel like that's pronounced. They're the best ones you do because you sort of put like you can put a little pause in because it's like a natural for you to be like I'm John Gibbons. Yeah. This is Josh.
So glad it's not my name. You're struggling with. That is a struggle in itself.
Well, I mean, it's a struggle to spell, but you know, saying it's not
it's all right. Isn't it? You've got there now.
But spelling that, I'd say I get it wrong.
I like it. It makes you sound like a bit of a piss, Sean Connery.
Yeah, this is the Weekender, if I didn't say that already. It's in five parts this week. Part two is going to be about the Irish Festival, which is taking place in Liverpool over the next week or so. Part three, I'm going to speak to Jonathan Norcroft about his excellent article at the weekend on Jürgen Klopp and his 3-year anniversary, and not just what he's done, but what's been built behind the scenes there and is working, we all think, very well at the moment, and hopefully pushing Liverpool towards glory. And in part four, we're going to be talking about Liverpool ladies and why you should be all going to see them this weekend while the men's team have a weekend off. But sandwiched either side of that, I never know the sandwich metaphor. You get it wrong, don't you? Because the ham that's the sandwich. This is the bread, and you're gonna get us for talking about 3 years of Jürgen Klopp as well. So, it's kind of memories, if you like, what we think he's done for Liverpool Football Club. And then in part five, we're going to be talking about the future and what we think Jürgen needs to do to turn doubters into believers, if there are still any yet. So, I mean, Kiva, first of all, it's been a laugh, hasn't it?
It's been great. Boom.
Is that your favourite word?
Because Jürgen's not only just like, he's just this charismatic person. Doesn't even matter that he's our football club's manager. Yeah. He's just a great person. And all is it, I just want to watch him in like every interview because there'll always be something good. And he makes everyone smile and not many people have that.
Yeah, I mean, he's box office, isn't he, Mo? And that's kind of, you know, what Keith is saying there, this idea that he just kind of draws you to him and with his energy, but also his kind of kindness, really, and his ideals about, I like his ideals about how he thinks the world should be, not just football. And, you know, it kind of reminds you that this is meant to be fun. It's meant to be, you know, you work all week and Josh is doing your editing in the office, but you get to Saturday and you get to kind of enjoy these footballers. That's what it all should be about.
Yeah, there's a humanity to him that I think really draws you in as well. Because like you say, he's able to kind of separate the cold face of professional football with the fact that these are human beings and these are people who in us and fans want to go out and enjoy ourselves. And you can tell that in the way he is with his players, not only when he's giving them hugs after the games, but sometimes even the players who he's had to say goodbye to, in the way that he's gone about that shows that all of it feeds into who he is. None of this is fake. And when you think back to October 2015 and how he was, and it was almost like a caricature version of what he was like when the big smile and the big laugh and again, the hugs and stuff. And there was a part of me that was worried that it might kind of wear off and then what was good about him might become his downfall. But that hasn't happened. I think even though he still doesn't give sound bites in every single interview, people still turn up wanting to hear what he's got to say. And I think he's still inspiring us. So I'm hoping that he's still inspiring the lads in the changing room just as much.
Yeah, I mean, and it's the the quality of the football as well as in it, Joshua. He's not just entertaining in the press conference. He's determined to give us entertaining football on the pitch as well. And although we haven't seen any trophies yet, and although we're all hoping that's next. You know, we've had some brilliant nights and there's been some football that's taken your breath away and there's been performances that, you know, you've just been absolutely buzzing off.
Yeah, and, you know, he's a good person and we've talked about that, but first and foremost, he's a good football manager, isn't he? And it was, isn't he? And it was dead interesting recently that Alison Becker, I think it was talking and he said that he doesn't talk all the time, Klopp, but he knows the right things to say, which I think is sort of contrary to what most people would think about him. I think people think he's sort of chatty all the time and is constantly energetic and giving so much to the players, whereas what you probably don't know is that he's probably actually quite like calculated and stuff and he's a deep thinker, and that's where the intelligence comes from, and that's I think is a good thing for the players, because as much as they need the reassurance and the hugs on the pitch and stuff like that, they also need to know where they've gone wrong and be told in no uncertain terms when that happens, because that's the way that improvement happens, and we have improved so much under him.
Yeah, I mean, when he took over, Keith, it was a funny time, wasn't it? Because it wasn't like Liverpool were doing dreadfully. I've just had a little look here. We were 10th in the table after 8 games. We'd won 3, drawn 3, lost 2. So all kind of very average, really. But, you know, he'd done okay. But it wasn't so much that everything was a disaster at Liverpool. It was just all a bit flat, wasn't it? It was all a bit kind of directionless, is a word they kind of used before. And just a little bit like people had sort of like given up dreaming a little bit, I felt.
Yeah, the feel was it the Stoke game, I think, was that?
That was the previous season. Previous last season. Game of the previous season.
I think
season,
Roger yeah. should really go then.
No, he's just shaking, shivering.
Like, no, like, I know. I didn't want to bring it up, but if Rogers goes then and we get Klopp, maybe, you know, he'd have that like first season effect, you know, that managers can have, but he didn't quite have the time. So that was good in a way because it took the pressure off of me coming to sort of like, you know, this sort of above average kind of all right team. And, you know, he's made it into his own. We're looking at Jürgen Klopp's team right now and it couldn't be any more Jürgen Klopp. Maybe there's one or two things that could change that would make it 100% Jürgen. But no, I think when he come in, it was just like, it was kind of when it, like Carlo Ancelotti was, it was like him and him. It was that kind of like battle. And you never really knew what to expect, because we'd seen Jürgen Klopp at Borussia Dortmund, this sort of smiling fella running up the touchline in his cap and just kind of like those amazing nights Dortmund had on the way to the Champions League final and stuff. But you never really, obviously not really a big watcher of the Bundesliga, but you never really like knew who he was entirely. And I feel like now he's like almost like, I'm going to describe him as like Adele, you know, the way you feel. Right, listen to this.
Go on, I'm with you.
Right, so Adele is one of them celebrities who could walk in here now and you think that you're a best mate just from the way she is on telly and in interviews. She's just so relaxed and really just a great person. And you just, I'm already a best mate. She doesn't even know me, but we're best friends. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Jürgen Klopp is that person, I think. He's like, if you walked in here now, he's your best mate because he just is, isn't he? Do you know what I mean?
I'm with it. It's a match out.
I got there.
You're going to down Klopp.
Yeah. That very first game when he takes over, Josh, is a way of Tottenham. He gets a decent 0-0 draw. I've just had a little look and I think there's 6 players who are still at the club who start that game, but none of them are starting. And it's been an almost kind of quiet revolution, really, in that, in a way, he's given everyone a go. So it wasn't like he came in and went, oh, I want to change everything. So maybe it's been more evolution. Yeah. I don't know. But what I mean is it's almost stronger than that. It's somewhere between the two. What's a word? You're a weird man. What's between evolution and revolution? But you know what I mean? It's like this idea that he came in and said, look, I'll give everyone a go. And he sort of has, really. But he's quietly just made everyone better.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He's got his ideas. And I think he gave everyone a fair chance to sort of show that they were part of his plans. And I remember he comes in the October, doesn't he? He doesn't sign anyone in January apart from Stephen Corker, who he really needed, as bad as he turned out to be. No offence to him, of course, but it feels like over that time he's as he started to instil his theories even more, he's been able to also bring in the players who don't live up to his style, don't match his style. So he's found out who the ones were who were already in the squad and then added to that, and the players he's added to that has you know, made Liverpool into the squad it is now. Because I think when he first took over, probably one of the issues was that there wasn't, you know, probably enough quality on the pitch, but there was definitely not enough quality on the bench either. That Tottenham team, I think there was like a load of kids on the bench that day,
yeah,
wasn't there?
Bogdan Toure, Conor Randall, Joe Allen, Jordan Ibe, Joao Teixeira and Jerome Sinclair.
So. Which is absolutely unreal when you think about like what the bench was against City or one of our mad benches we had this season. So he's done that just by sort of constantly improving players, but also by improving on the players that he had. And it's six players in total that still play for the club now in that team.
But it's only James Milner who you would count as a first team player. Others are Mignolet, Nathaniel Klein, Alberto Moreno, Adam Lallana and Divock Origi.
And we didn't necessarily think they were like bad players for Liverpool at that time, did we? So that does show that what they've become now, they're like Liverpool's, you know, decent squad players now, albeit they'll be the scapegoats for some Liverpool supporters or some people in the media in particular. But it shows that Klopp has just improved on them by buying better quality in them, and that's what led to the team we've got now.
I think he's made us think bigger as well, I think, Mo, and I think that's something I really like about Jürgen, is that kind of brought a bit of a swagger back and brought a bit of a, we are Liverpool Football Club and we belong at the top and we belong challenging and that's what we should be every year. And I think the longer kind of it's been without a league title, I kind of started to kind of make excuses for the team, really. You say, well, we can't compete with them type thing. Whereas under Rafford, it wasn't like that. But you kind of, I guess, from the Gillette years and from what happened at Manchester City and kind of stuff like that, you start to think, oh, we can't compete with them. And that the biggest thing that Jürgen's done to everyone is to make us feel like we can.
Definitely. I think when you think about the kind of job that he went into and some of the guys who went into that seat before him, there's been a case of some people trying to kind of bring our expectations down a little bit without necessarily making it obvious that that's what they're doing. Whereas with Jürgen Klopp, he's basically brought the team up to where our expectations should be. He's not saying, no, you shouldn't be thinking that big. You should be thinking that big. I know he's not a big fan of going on about the history of the club, but he's aware of it and he knows how much it drives us. And I'm pretty sure he knows it should be driving the players. But you're right. I mean, if you take out that kind of 18-month period of Brendan Rodgers, we've been kind of pinging around between fourth and seventh for far too long. And it's almost like you say, John, you make excuses season in, season out. Rather than going into the season expecting to challenge for trophies, you're going in hoping to challenge for trophies, not hoping to win.
Hiya, it's John Gibbons. I'm with Neil Atkinson. And hello. We're here to talk about Kevin Keegan's got a new book out.
It's astonishing, to be honest with you. I mean, there are a few more interesting people in English football, in English football history, really, than Kevin Keegan. I've always sort of been, you know, he's got a mythology around him, which is just spectacular, to be honest with you. And the idea he's done a full book, which explains sort of who he is and what he's about. And what I've always liked about Keegan, you sort of got the impression, is that he's a man who's very much in touch with himself, with his emotions, with his, you know, it's not just the idea of, you know, the cliched thing of when he was at Newcastle, but, you know, there's some fantastic stories of him with Shankly and being presented something by Shankly, a sword, and then handing it back to Shankly. And the idea of getting all of that would, you know, him going through all of that with you on a personal level would just be astonishing, really. And the other thing is he loves football.
Yeah, he does love football, and that really comes across. And he loves Shankly as well. He actually dedicates the book to Shankly, and that's really nice. The book's called My Life in Football. It is out on Audible now, so the audiobook is out. It came out this week, and it's been very well received. And also, you might have seen a few bits of it serialised, if you're in the UK. And I think what's quite nice is, obviously, you know, you forget kind of the places that he came from, Keegan, and I think that's something that comes across really well in the Liverpool chapters. And I've just been listening to the Liverpool chapters, and they're great. And the stuff around, obviously, the idea of someone signing from Scunthorpe now and going to Liverpool now seems ridiculous. But even at the time, was remarkable in that he talks about his first... He scores on his debut, of course he does, because he's brilliant. But he says he got hold of the programme recently and he's not even in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's not listed as a Liverpool player. Because everyone was like, oh, don't worry about him.
I was talking to my dad recently about Fabinho, and he was saying, well, this is what we used to do. He said, this is what we used to do, was just lads are just... You'd sign them and then you would never hear anything about them for 3 months at least. And he said, and there was only really two major exceptions to that. One was Kenny Dalglish and the other one was Kevin Keegan, where we bought him. And then a week later he was playing. And everyone was like, who's this lad? What's this about? How's this happened?
Yeah.
Because you can do the thing of, oh yeah, well, you know, it was a different time then. But the idea that Liverpool bought someone and he just played straight away was like you say, he's not even in the programme. Yeah. It was like people would go, what's this all about? And so it's worth remembering that. In many ways... sometimes different times are different in different ways than you think, if you sort of see what I mean. And that's one of the ways in which this is different. Yeah, you know, the idea of Liverpool buying someone from Scunthorpe, all right, yeah, might have happened. Normally that lad would go and disappear off and work with Roy Evans for 6 months or something.
I think that was, as you say, what was expected of him. And that's one of the things that come across in the audiobook and listening to it is how much he backs himself. So even though, so he signed from Scunthorpe and he's like, that's mad, but he still manages to negotiate his contract up.
Yeah.
So he still manages to go, oh, I was expecting a bit more than that. Like, he's a man who very much knows his worth, even though he's going from, you know, I mean, any of us signing for Liverpool, you just sign whatever in front of you, don't you? But he manages to negotiate. I was expecting a bit more than that. And the Scunthorpe chairman's kicking him under the table and kind of stuff like that. And, you know, but he's been like that throughout his career. And that's why, obviously, he ends up moving to Germany and the stuff like that and around Newcastle. And it's all in there. It's his whole career. But, you know, I loved listening to the Liverpool chapters. I haven't listened to the other stuff yet, and I'm going to get into it. But it is available on Audible now. There's another really good story I like, which shows the difference between kind of going from Scunthorpe, is that he's making his debut and he's told to there for 2 o'clock. So the day before, he goes, I'll see how far it is. So he drives to the ground and it takes him 15 minutes. And he's like, right. And so the day of the game, he leaves a 1:45. And then struggles to get there. And then he's in this altercation with the policeman trying to get through the barricade and saying, I play for Liverpool. And the policeman says, yeah, so do I, mate. I get changed the 1:45 and go up. And stuff like that, and it's really nice. And so, but yeah, do download it. I mean, Keegan, he's one of the biggest names in British football, as Neil very eloquently said at the start. It's available now, and yeah, I'm reading it, enjoying getting stuck in, and enjoying listening to the rest. So yeah, get to Audible, do download the audiobook, and yeah, enjoy Kevin Keegan, because he's someone we should all enjoy. And it is John Gibbons, and I'm now joined, I'd like to be joined on the phone by Rosser from the band Keela, who were involved in the Liverpool Irish Festival. It's Liverpool Irish Festival time again in the city, and it's always an exciting time in Liverpool. And Keela, you're playing at the Arts Club, Rosser.
Yeah, I never played there before. I was looking at it, looks like a nice venue.
Yeah, it's a good one, you'll enjoy it, they'll look after you. You've played the Irish Festival before though, haven't you?
Never, no.
Oh, wait, sorry.
This will be our first time. We played in Liverpool, I think, in 1997, so okay, about 20 years ago, maybe 96. Anyway, so a long time ago.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess you're looking forward to getting involved then. I mean, there's lots going on kind of throughout the city, but I mean, your gigs is kind of one of the bigger ones. It's at the Arts Club, as you say, which is a nice venue. So yeah, 19th of October, we should say. And yeah, you're looking forward to coming over?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, people say that Liverpool's a mini Dublin. There was a boat used to leave from Dublin every day and stop off in the Isle of Man and go over to Liverpool. So there's an awful lot of connection there. But they stopped it in the 70s, so there's probably a generation that hasn't got that connection. But it seems to go back way, way back.
Yeah, I mean, it does. And this kind of festival, if you like, just a celebration of the Irish heritage of the city and the connections and lots going on. And you've obviously had a sort of long career. I'm interested in how much of an Irish band you kind of see yourself, because the term Irish music is just kind of used to cover, well, any band from Ireland really, but how much of it do you see yourself as an Irish band? Do you see that as part of you, or are you just Keela making the music that kind of you want to make, and it's obviously going to be steeped in kind of what your, you know, your traditions and what you've been influenced by?
Well, we're definitely Irish. I mean, there's 100%. But yeah, in terms of classification, we were a lot more blending what we were at with other cultures' music. Not by learning it, just by listening to it and saying, if you get a tune and you kind of go, this would really work well with the mood in this melody, so we'd be dressing it up. So we had our ears finely tuned to the world music scene for years, and so it was being filed under world music as well. Yeah. The traditional musicians, while we're playing traditional idioms like jigs, reels, polkas, hornpipes and that, the people who would be the kind of who would be teaching it and the conservative traditionalists would see us as being completely non-traditional.
Right.
So we're kind of like Schrodinger's cat. We're traditional but not. But you know, we sing in Irish, of course, Os Gaeilge, and these are all self-penned songs by Ronan and Colm. And we have 8 people in the band. There's, you know, anything from drums, bass, electric guitar, mandolin, whistle, pipes, fiddle, flute, and baron, and more.
Yeah, and I mean, as you sort of alluded to before as well, by the fact that it was the 90s when you came over to Liverpool, it's a long career what the band have had. I'm reading here that you've played in over 30 countries around the world, 5 continents, played in an event that welcomed the Dalai Lama to Ireland, and it's been sort of a very varied kind of career and a lot to enjoy, presumably.
Ah, well, yeah, God, we're looking back 30 years. It's you know, I'm still enjoying it, and we're still getting to visit new places, meet brilliant people. You know, it does give you a very, despite yourself, maybe a worldview, and you can find yourself in conversations talking about places that people wouldn't have an opportunity to go to, and it starts to, you know, you can be afraid of. You can sometimes not mention because it might start sounding pretentious. Well, when I was in Canada, when I was in Zimbabwe, actually what they do in Japan, and there's, you know, yeah. 3 continents in the one sentence, and it's like, all right, it's a bit much. But, you know, heck, I'm loving it.
But that's a natural kind of Irish thing to kind of play it down, I suppose, really, isn't it? And that kind of exists in Liverpool too, is you don't want to kind of say, you know, be kind of too big-headed, but it is kind of,
you know.
But
you don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable either, and, you know, you don't want to freaking imbalance a conversation either, you know. Anyway,
that's the kind of way it is. I just wanted to point out a few more things that are going on at the Liverpool Irish Festival, because it's not just music. Obviously, music's a big part of it, as you can imagine. But there's talks mm-hmm. going on. There's films. There's a play, How to Shoot an Irishman, which is starring Robbie O'Neill, who was in a few weeks ago, which is mm-hmm. going on at the Everyman. So kind of huge amounts going on and showing the kind of the breadth, if you like, of. Well, what Ireland's given the world, I think, Russell, and that must be something that you're proud of all the travelling that you've done, is that Ireland's a relatively small country, low population, but had a huge influence on world culture.
Yeah, it is kind of incredible. A lot of Irish festivals aren't as wide as this one. And the previous one I attended years ago was in... sometime around 2000. It was over in Turkey, and Jamie, it was kind of incredible. You know, here was a Turkey, some guy who was working in a Greek bank, got the job, was bringing over DJs, was bringing over films. I mean, Irish DJs weren't heard of, yeah. And still aren't heard of in Irish festivals. Really, really imaginative. He had he had a play, but what was really funny was the films. I think he was bringing over one Irish language film, and they were censored because they didn't know what was being said in them. So they didn't get through, and they couldn't show the film. But that kind of festival is really important because, you know, as they say, art and music are the weather forecast of the soul. And it's really important. I mean, if I'm presuming, I haven't seen the full thing, but artists and writers, along with musicians. I mean, musicians is one of the ways of expressing yourself, but there's so many others. It's really important that you know, for a festival to be that wide in its if they're saying an Irish festival, that it's that wide.
Fantastic. So yeah, as you say, it's Arts Club where the gig is at. October the 19th, tickets are kind of still available, and you're not doing loads of shows in autumn, are you? Is this the only one?
No, yeah, we're extremely busy this summer now. We're every weekend, or from March onwards, and then it's just kind of dwindled away a bit. We're also planning this big gig in Christmas, so we kind of have to tone down some of the busyness as well. We've got a big gig trying to fill a 2,000 seater in Dublin. On the 22nd, we're calling it Fela Kila, and we have a whole load of performers. And you know, it's we're taking a chance. We've been 10 years not doing the big venues just because people's money disappeared,
yeah.
And so did the audience, with 500,000 people leaving the country again. You know, and so it's since 2010 to 2015, there was 500,000 people left. So and then people didn't have the money. So we're taking a big chance now. I think people are saying that this. That there's a lot more employment in the country. I don't know if they have any more money because they're all paying too much rent. But we'll see anyway.
That's one for another day, I suppose. But we, you know, hopefully some of our listeners out there in Dublin will go out and support you in that big gig. It sounds like it'd be good fun. But in the meantime, yeah, if you are in Liverpool or around for the Irish Festival, I think Liverpool at home that weekend as well, so people might be around. Yeah, that's at the Arts Club on the 19th of October. But do check out Keela online if you've not heard them before. And huge thanks to Ross here for joining us. And yeah, back to some football. I'm now delighted to be joined by Jonathan Norcroft, who's a football correspondent for The Times, and to talk about the piece that you wrote at the weekend, Jonathan, about Jurgen Klopp, and it has been 3 years of Jurgen, and quite a notable landmark, really, and a kind of nice time to reflect on the achievements, because although in many ways the achievements haven't been quite what a club like Liverpool should expect or should hope for, at least, which is silverware, actually, if you go back to where we were when Jurgen took over, you know, and this the kind of state throughout the club, then not just what they were producing on the pitch, but the fact that they were sort of felt a bit directionless off it, how far Liverpool have come from that point of view is quite considerable.
It is. I mean the whole question of those 3 years progress is, as you've alluded to, Gibbo, quite difficult to measure, because, you know, for every time you praise Jurgen Klopp, you get the lobby coming back at you on social media with the "what has he won" thing. But, you know, I do think we're, in particularly the modern era as well, we're at a time where it is about a little bit more than winning. I mean, winning's still really, really important. But I think a number of things, you know, I think it's so difficult now with the power of the very, very richest elite clubs to actually overtake them, to surpass them, that, you know, just because you haven't been able to, let's say, domestically overtake Manchester City in a single season doesn't mean you've had a failed campaign. Equally, it's the same, you know, did Liverpool have a failed Champions League campaign last year because they were beaten by the juggernaut that's Real Madrid? I think we're in that kind of era, and also a time where I think having an adventure, having fun, having a bit of magic in your life is what people are looking for out of football more than they've ever done, or at least more than they did since the, you know, 20s and 30s when the football boomed then. So in that context, Jurgen Klopp's brought, you know, progress, development, a personality and identity to the club. He's brought an incredible sort of set of 3 years of memories. One of the notable things he said to me was that, you know, yes, I haven't won anything, he said, but you can never guarantee when you're going to win, but let's have the time of our lives while we're waiting. And I think that sums Jurgen Klopp up, and I think he has given many fans the time of their lives in the last sort of 3 years. So that was part of what I wanted to reflect on in the piece, and also just the fact that there's a lot more to this than just the 3 year Jurgen Klopp span. I think Jurgen Klopp is the sort of biggest but last piece in a jigsaw that the club and FSG have been building a lot longer, maybe since 2012. So I wanted to also show how he slotted into that.
Yeah, I mean, he has sort of, I mean, slotted into the right word. And I think the fact that what comes across is not just how talented the individuals are kind of involved, and Jurgen Klopp is the easiest one to see, but there's other people obviously involved, but how well they work together and how much of that is kind of luck and how much is judgment and how much kind of reflects well on the individuals involved. And from what I mean by that is, obviously other managers in the past at Liverpool have found people kind of infringing on what they think is their job quite difficult. Whereas Jurgen Klopp, I think from day one, was very open that he didn't want to do anything and would listen to other people. And so that's what I mean about, I think there's always an amount of luck involved. If you go into work with some people who you've never met before, then, you know, it could go well, it could go not. But also the fact that there was a positive mindset going into it must have helped.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right, Gibbo, there's always going to be a sort of chemistry aspect to it. I mean, will the chemistry work between the person you appoint and the people ready in key positions? But I do think that Liverpool did as much as they could to take luck out of it by the sheer effort they put in to identifying Jurgen. I try to tell how Michael Edwards and his department put the same rigor into identifying managers as they do with players. And I don't think many clubs do that. I know Southampton do. I think Watford, maybe because they appoint one every year, put a lot of work into identifying managers. But, you know, it's a bit of a kind of knowledge gap that clubs maybe don't put quite as much detail into those appointments as they do into recruiting footballers, which is illogical, of course. So, you know, basically, before identifying Jurgen, Edwards and his department studied a range of candidates. At one point, Michael Edwards went incognito and sat in a hotel listening to a certain manager on the phone, observing his behaviour, deciding he's not for us. They spoke to a lot of people about Jurgen players, colleagues, even journalists, with a 60-page dossier on him. Ian Graham crunched the numbers to show, you know, how he'd pretty much overachieved in every season except for two in his 14 years of management. And then Mike Gordon sort of developed a personal relationship with Jürgen on the phone before then meeting him in New York. So there's a lot of work went into finding that this was going to be the right guy for Liverpool. And that's before the bleeding obvious, which is anyone that had watched Dortmund with half a brain would see that he was a manager that would be perfect for English football and perfect for a club like Liverpool. But there was a lot more detail that went into that. And then, as you say, it's a fact that on top of all those great things, he's a guy who by nature is collegiate, by background had worked in a structure similar to Liverpool at Borussia Dortmund, where he had a chief executive and a director of football that he worked hand in glove with. So all those things sort of came together to sort of slot him in, as I say, that big last piece of the jigsaw that Liverpool had waiting.
And it's not just at the top, is it? This idea of being sort of collegiate, if you like, it's the things you talk about, particularly towards the end of the article, about how he's fostered the kind of a one club mentality, and that's a phrase that is thrown around so much, but when you see it, it's kind of hard to dispute, and that's something that he's brought a togetherness at Liverpool Football Club that I was unsure would kind of ever exist again in a way.
No, and interestingly, listening to his ambitions over the next two or three years, yes, winning is part of it, but he also talked about trying to strengthen further the bonds between players and fans, club and fans, manager and fans. You know, it's central to his agenda. And of course, we saw it in action at Dortmund. And I would suggest that it's not just a kind of airy-fairy thing. He realises it's actually a tool of management. You know, I think when Liverpool overcame Manchester City last season in the Champions League, it was a collective effort. There was a wave of sort of power and emotion that they hit City with, and that City weren't able to cope with, particularly Anfield. So, you know, I think he's quite, there's a pragmatic element to harnessing that, but actually, you know, more than anything, just stems from how he sees things as a person, and the fact that, you know, he lives as he practices what he preaches, because you don't hear him in on or off the record saying anything critical about the people he works with. He presents unity at all times, and I think it's a genuine thing. I don't think it's put on. I think he genuinely, those three that we've talked about genuinely make decisions together and try and, you know, present a united front.
Just a couple more things. I think it obviously started at the very beginning, and that time where Jürgen Klopp's out of work, but was planning on being out of work for a year, and Liverpool comes calling, and I think you needed some persuasion, but not a huge amount. And I guess that's worth remembering as well, how much kind of he wanted to come to Liverpool. He wasn't a manager, you know, out of work looking for a job, kind of scratching around. He wasn't on the merry-go-round at all. He was actually literally on the beach, I think, wasn't he? So the fact that he was so willing to kind of to break this plan, and, you know, he says he was very much on holiday, but it shows kind of, I don't know, shows something. I'm not sure what it shows. Maybe shows that all Liverpool will always be a big club, or maybe just shows that he thought, you know what, this is just a really good fit for me, and I'm not going to let some other idiot do it.
Yeah, I think it shows as well that he's a man that makes decisions on sort of gut, on gut instinct. That's how he is. And yeah, I mean, he said to me that he was literally in holiday mode, as he put it, a week before Liverpool's call. I think his idea had been that, you know, round about November he was going to start, maybe going and watching a few clubs train. Just sort of, you know, gently sort of strengthen his knowledge, put his face around, and then maybe look for something in the new year. So, you know, Liverpool kind of yanked him off the beach. But I think he said to Mike Gordon after they met in New York that, you know, there was a train leaving and he realised he needed to get on it. You know, that train was a Liverpool job. And that is what you see with him. You know, he will it's a spontaneity about him, isn't there? He'll act on those gut instincts, and it served him pretty well.
Just before you go, Jonathan, you delved into the murky word of Reddit, world of Reddit, sorry, this week, and I think quite enjoyed it as well, and spoke very kind of honestly about a few things related to journalism, and it's well worth, I would say, anyone going on to Jonathan's Twitter, because I know he tweeted out, and having a look at that, anyone who's interested in getting into kind of journalism or any kind of football writing, I would recommend having a look at that. One thing I wanted to talk to you about that you mentioned on here is just how much work goes into an article like this, because I mean in some ways it's a sort of career's work, isn't it, because it's building up the contacts, building up the trust, but even from a very small kind of physically writing this article, it's something that has to happen over a period of time, and it's a good thing that there's quality newspapers still letting journalists write this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I hope people think that, and thanks for doing the Reddit thing. I mean, I really care about this sort of stuff, you know. I really care about the need for newspapers in a the more difficult marketplace to try and win the battle through quality and providing things that you know we're trained to provide, and that hopefully we can still do really, really well. And that isn't clicks, that's trying to go deep into stories and use our years of building up contacts and stuff to tell these things. And you know, I guess I would have to say that Liverpool are a very, very forward-looking and receptive club to any ideas that you come at them for quality pieces. And not every club is like that. Some, you know, it's part of Liverpool's policy, and other clubs would rather either publish things themselves or just keep things in house. But I think with Liverpool were very trusting me to allow me, you know, not only access to Jürgen, but access to some key people behind the scenes who don't usually sort of speak and trust me with you know that sort of information. And I guess, you know, again, I'm middle aged now, and it's probably because I've been covering the club for 16, 17 years when I came down from Scotland to do, you know, essentially Liverpool, Everton, United, and City was my initial job in England. So, you've got to develop trust with clubs and the people you work with, and hopefully, I just think you've got to try and show readers, you've got to use that and try and show readers something that they can't get elsewhere. So, you know, there's lots of great. I mean, I do think Liverpool are the club that's best covered in the media. There's some great stuff in about Liverpool, and it's probably some very good journalists and also very good. And this isn't really. I'm really not bumming them up to try and get future interviews here, but there is a really good media department who understand what quality journalism can do in terms of informing the fan base. You know, and I wish there were more clubs like that.
Here. Huge thanks to Jonathan for joining us. And now I think we're going to go and talk about Liverpool ladies who've got a big game this weekend. It's John Gibbons back on the weekend, and I'm delighted to be joined by Leanne Robe, who's a new signing for Liverpool Women, and also Heather Carroll, who helps us out with the LFC ladies and covers them extensively, and now does a bit of part-time work for LFC Women as well, which is fantastic news. So Leanne, well, welcome to Liverpool, welcome to the club and all that. Are you enjoying it so far?
Yeah, I'm really loving Liverpool. It's a beautiful city. Lots to do, so yeah, I'm really enjoying being up here.
As people can probably tell by your accent, you know, sort of new to the area as well. You signed from Millwall in the summer. I mean, from what I gather, you had your choice of a few different clubs in the Women's Super League. Was there anything in particular that sort of attracted you to Liverpool and why you wanted to come here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's the size of the club and the history of the club. But it was the staff here and the players that were coming in that really attracted it to me.
Yeah, sorry.
But being a nice city as well.
So there's been quite an upheaval over the summer. Lots of new players coming in, not just yourself, but you know, it's a whole new squad almost. How difficult has it been to all gel together, and how close do you think you are to playing as a cohesive unit?
Well, it's actually been easy to gel together,
okay,
which is very, very rare to get that. I'm sure in men's football and in women's football, we literally do just have the most amazing bunch of people. So all coming together, it was fine gelling. It was literally just everyone was like, oh my God, this is weird. Like, everyone's gotten really well straight away and gelled together. In regards to the stuff on the pitch that's building literally week by week. And we're just getting the final little pieces together to hopefully create goals and start scoring some goals. But we're almost there.
Yeah, game on Sunday, home gaming on Sunday against Yeovil, and that might be the one hopefully where it starts to click and a few goals do start to come.
Yeah, our game on Sunday at home against Yeovil was a massive opportunity for us to be getting some goals and get 3 points. So we're all really looking forward to that.
Yeah, a big game Sunday, isn't it, Heather? And it's a funny way of describing it when Yeovil have struggled in recent years, came bottom last year, we get to get a point this year. But really, kind of with the way that the women's team started, it's as I say, there's been difficult games, there's been, you know, wins under the belt, there's been nice moments like the penalty win against Durham and stuff like that. It would be good to see a really good performance on Sunday and to kind of get a bit more of a sense about what this team's about.
Yeah, I think Sunday's a really exciting opportunity for the team. Sort of, you know, we've been building over the last few weeks and the performance of on the pitch has been getting better and better. So, you know, against Yeovil, if we can get a couple of goals, I think that'll just be so great for team spirit.
Yeah, and it's about sort of growing together and you know, you're gelling off the pitch, which is great, Leanne, but showing more of that kind of understanding on it, you know, can only be a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is always the case of bringing a brand new team together. We're not naive to know that it's going to take a little bit of time, but as I say, we're already nearly there, it is just a matter of a few fine-tuning a few things and linking up the defence, midfield and strikers, which we believe is about to happen.
I think as well, from a supporter's point of view, I think, you know, the supporters are really behind the team because they can see, like, that they are, you know, fighting for each other on the pitch and things like that. Like, we got beat last week at Reading, but every single player, you know, put their body on the line, and you could see at the end of the game, like, they'd run themselves ragged, you know, trying to pull it back around.
Yeah, and the fans are still behind the team as well, Heather, are they? It's a brilliant kind of group of supporters, passionate supporters. Obviously, towards the end of the last season, there was kind of a little bit of discontent. Kind of, how is it in the terraces or the stands now?
I wouldn't know these days. But no,
you're posh in the press box.
I'm in the press box now, yeah. But no, I think, you know, speaking to the supporters after the games, like I've just said, you know, they're more than happy with the team that we've got. You know, they've loved all the new players. They've got all their new songs. You know, and they've got the songbooks out again. So, yeah, no, they're all happy with the team. And, you know, I think it's just a matter of time until the results start coming our way.
Have you got a song, Leanne?
I have got a song.
Oh.
I'm going to sing it for you, though. It's a song that I actually do really like. It's a fun.
I mean, they're very creative, aren't they? You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a creative bunch. They're almost wasted.
Yeah.
It should be in Eurovision.
First home game, went over to the fans after, and then they sang my song for me, and I was like, that's good, done a little bit of dancing. But no, the fans are amazing up here, literally. Like, I couldn't believe it when I come to the club, like the amount of support and welcome messages that I got, and I still do get messages every week from different fans after the game, so it's really nice to constantly have their support as well.
You were sort of the first one as well, weren't you, in the door, so you sort of like heralded the new team.
Set the
scene for things to come.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think the potential of this team is, Heather? Obviously, you've watched the Liverpool women's team for a long time. You've seen champions, you've seen seasons where it's been a little bit kind of disappointing. It's a young team, isn't it? It has to be said. It's a new team, as we've said. What do you think they could achieve this season, and what would you like to see kind of between now and the end of the year?
I think obviously it's going to be difficult against the top teams because you look at Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea, now they've all got really like steady squads where they haven't had much change over the last few years. Our team's like a brand new team, but I do believe we can pick up the results, you know, against the teams that will be lower than us in the table, especially looking back at the Reading game last week. You know, last year we lost 6-0 on aggregate to Reading in the league, whereas last week we were only 1-0, so I was quite happy with that.
progress,
you know what I mean? But no, I was happy with it, and I'm happy with the team. Like, I think, you know, the players that we've got are fantastic, and you look at players like, you know, Leanne, she's stepped up a league as well, you know, from WSL 2, and, you know, she doesn't look like out of place at all. Like, she doesn't look like she's come up. She looks like she's been playing WSL 1 for years.
There you are. Yeah. Kind of has to say that. I mean, does it seem a little bit more unpredictable, the league this year? I don't know, from a little bit from the outside looking in, I noticed obviously Chelsea ran away with it last year, and this year they've only won one of the first four games, and I'm sure they'll still be strong. And you know, I noticed they drew against Everton, who that's their kind of first point of the season. And I was speaking to Everton ladies fan, and they were saying, well, we haven't only got 1 point, but we're playing pretty well. And do you think it just looks a little bit more, not necessarily competitive, because it's always been competitive, but you might see a few unpredictable results this year?
Yeah, I think so. I think you look at teams who are like Bristol, I think they took a point off Chelsea as well, didn't they? Yeah. And so, you know, they could be a dark horse. Birmingham have again surprised everyone. They seem to surprise everyone every year.
And West Ham doing well the first
West Ham
season.
Have been doing well. You know, Arsenal have come out the block, so they like the team to beat at the moment. And City have got a lot of injuries, so it looks like, you know, everyone's taking points off everyone, and we're not actually that far off when you look at the table. We've actually even got a game in hand, so.
Yeah, so the men don't play this weekend. Obviously, it's an international break, so it's a good opportunity for people to go down and support their Liverpool team. It's 2 o'clock at Tranmere, and I would, what I'd say as well from when I've been in the past, Leanne, it's a family event, isn't it? And so obviously with the men's team, it's got a certain a type of supporter that we associate with. We go into the matches anyway, whereas for the women, it's a place to bring children, it's a place to bring people maybe for the first game. The crowd's obviously smaller, but that's nice because it allows you to be more intimate with the players, and you'll always say hello and smile for pictures and stuff like that. And it's a nice day out for people who are just getting into football.
Yeah, definitely. Like I say, with the men having a break this weekend and having our game, like I say, it's a perfect opportunity for people to come along, and if they haven't yet seen a women's game, then experience it. We've got some really exciting, talented players in the team, and like I say, I can guarantee some goals this weekend and some bites and interaction with the fans after, so it'll be nice.
Yeah, 2 o'clock, isn't it, Heather? Sunday, Prenton Park. What do you think about the Prenton Park move then? Just quickly before we go, obviously it was witnessed last year. It's playing on grass, which is maybe better for the players. But I mean, it's a great stadium as well, isn't it? It's a league football stadium, and I really like Tranmere.
Yes, we played our last few home games there. Obviously, the new home stadium still hasn't been announced yet for the rest of the season, right. But we are playing there on Sunday. Yeah, so it should be a great afternoon. You know, it's £5 for adults on the gates. It's free for season ticket holders of both Liverpool and Tranmere, and for members as well. So it's a good day out for the family.
See, I'll get down. And lovely to meet Leanne, and good luck for the season. And if I would, if you scored on Sunday, I want to see that dance to your song. But we'll see how that goes. So thanks to Heather, obviously, for joining us. And now we're going to go back to the studio and talk to the guys about Jurgen Klopp. Back with John Gibbons, that is me. I'm back with the room. It is Josh Sexton, it is Mo Stewart, and it is Kiefer O'Neill. And it's 3 years now, Josh, and what I enjoy about other people talking about Liverpool is like, well, he needs to win trophies. And it's like, well, he knows that. And everyone at Liverpool knows that. We can talk about the kind of the fun and the enjoyment, but it's been building towards something, and that's something, you know, is the next 3 or 4 years and what we're all hoping Liverpool do, which is Champions of England, which is other trophies as well, are hopefully on top. And that's been the whole point all along.
Yeah, and it's almost like opposition fans don't realise that the steady improvement that he's done over so many years is sort of aspiring towards this. You know, we've had the fun, like you say, we've had all them great nights under him, but it's all been building up to this. So it's easy to say that he does need to win a trophy, but I think in terms of what he needs to win, I think if he can get anything this season, I think we thought the League Cup in that game against Chelsea would have been a good one this year, because it sometimes has helped title challenges out in the past as well. But the Premier League would be a good one to win, Jurgen, if you're listening, because we've sort of wanted one of them for a long time, longer than I've been alive actually. So one of them would be nice. Anything which is silver and shiny and Jordan Henderson can hold aloft above his gorgeous head would be sound, I think. But it is easy to say that, isn't it? The improvement's been gradual, and it feels like we're at the point now where that is what needs to happen next.
He's lost 3 cup finals at Liverpool now. He's lost a couple before that at Dortmund as well. Do you think there's anything in particular he's doing wrong going into that? I know it's really difficult. We're not in the changing room and stuff like that. Do you think there's anything that he's doing particularly wrong going into the games? Do you think it's anything in particular the team's doing wrong? Or do you think it's just a case of we weren't quite ready and hopefully we will be in the future, and when we are ready, we'll win them? I think it's really hard to say that there's definitely some kind of pattern forming, because as much as we like to say that good teams get to finals, the final itself is always still quite a random event. There are still loads of things that happen in finals that you don't see happening in other kinds of games. So in terms of saying he needs to do one thing better, it's hard to pinpoint it. What I would say is that at halftime in both the Europa League and Champions League finals, there was an opportunity to send us out in the second half with a bit of momentum to say, look, we have done X, Y, Z. As it was last year, we were in the game. As it was last time, we were ahead in the game. Let's go finish the job. And both times that didn't happen. Whether or not that's something that he's been thinking about in terms of maybe I need to look at changing things quicker or anything like that, I don't know. But I think we just need some more luck. I think the more that we do improve as a team, the more that the mistakes or the errors that we have made are being shed away, the harder we become to be, and the more we can sustain that for, the easier it's going to be to replicate that in the biggest games.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those cases, Kevin, isn't it, that we're not going to be able to prove we can do it until we do, and I think that's the case. Do you sort of have a feeling that once they can get one, then that belief will come that we'll, you know, and one will become many, a bit like Andy Murray at the tennis, you know what I mean? Yeah. It took him ages to get one, and then he couldn't stop winning championships. I mean,
it's like Mo said, it's kind of like the luck thing. Jürgen Klopp's got this little cloud of sort of bad luck around him in finals. He's obviously lost the last five, and every time he's going to get to a final, people are going to bring that stat up, and he's going to be like, you know, I don't think that would really affect him. We just haven't been lucky in the finals themselves. Getting to a final is a great thing. Like, we've experienced, not many clubs get to finals ever, if not in a long time. So, you know, we're getting there. That's the important thing. But the next step is to win something. And, you know, going out to the League Cup in hindsight now probably isn't a good thing, because it would have gave us that momentum, maybe, if we can go and win something like that. But we want the biggest things, and we got to almost the biggest thing last year, didn't we? All, you know, all the players walk past the Champions League trophy, and you know, we were that close to getting there. I think we will get there. We've just got to be patient, and it comes down to that little sliver of luck, and I think it's coming our way. I can feel it.
If you want to talk about patterns, the pattern's probably in the opposition, isn't it? Is that the three finals we've been in, and we've come up against teams who were built at the stage today, were not already to win trophies, whereas Liverpool have been on this path of progression. We came up against a City side who sort of for years around that time been winning trophies and had built up this great side with so much quality in it that cost so much money. Sevilla had won like three, but they won three Europa Leagues. Yeah, they won their third Europa League in a row then. And then Real Madrid last year did the same with the Champions League. So I think that would be the pattern, you say, but there's been no pattern in terms of from the Liverpool side of things, like you say, it's just bits of luck and things like that.
I think on the on the trophies subjects in general, especially when we're being compared and Klopp's being compared with other managers, I've seen lots of people using Klopp and Pochettino as a way of excusing what Mourinho's doing, as if to say, well, if he's under pressure, why aren't these people under pressure? What that argument forgets is that the way we're doing it, it's the better way to do it. Just because someone is supposedly harshly treated doesn't mean that we should treat everyone harshly. We are building long term. You can tell that in the age range of our squad. You can tell that in the fact that in each 38 game block of those 3 years, we've got better.
Yeah,
we have definitely got a better team than we have now. Last year, we were worried about defence sometimes. Now, we're not worried about defence. It's just a case of making sure the building blocks get there at the right time. But let's not forget, there's at least another five clubs who are all trying to do exactly the same thing. And only one of them is going to be happy at the end of every year. So we've got to put that into effect as well. We can control what we can control. We can't worry about anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, that's the case, I guess. Josh, do you think they're ready now? Or do you think there's more building that needs to be done?
It's hard, isn't it? Like, I think if you'd have asked me that question at the start of the season, I'd have said absolutely ready now. I think the attack is probably a bit of a worry at the moment, albeit I think that there's certain factors that could happen within the squad now to make it click. I know Chamberlain can't come back this season, and that would be one of the things that you'd point out straight away, but there's people we could sign in January, or there's lads who I think could do something in that sort of more creative role. And I think that probably is the last improvement we can make. But in terms of what we've been building up and all the sort of things that were wrong throughout Jürgen's reign and through all the weaknesses we had have been strengthened now. And I think if you look at it in terms of that, then hopefully the luck will come now. And then if we're sort of putting ourselves in that position to challenge, then I think we can do it.
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to the point earlier. Maybe you don't know you're ready, and you can't prove you're ready until you're there. So we can always say that we think the squad's good enough to win a league title, we think, or at least a kind of a major trophy, and they can kind of think it as well. But it's, you know, it's all talk until it's done.
It really is, and I think no one knows that better than Jürgen himself. I think every single time we've done the team talk together and watched him last year, press conference after press conference, and he's batted it away week in, week out. We don't care about the title in October. We care about the next game in October. And I think he's drilling that into the lads as well, because that's the way to do it. You've got to kind of have that mentality of just the next, just the next, just the next. And then before you know it, you look up and, oh, there's only 3 weeks left and we're top of the table. I think because of how long this has built up for everyone, it's going to be kind of tricky if we're in the mix, really in the mix, come February, March, April time. It's going to be very hard to keep everyone's mind together and everyone kind of like, to stop us getting a bit overexcited, so to speak, if it's going really well. But I think if you can do that, I really don't see why we can't do it this year.
I mean, something I really like about the squad, Kiva, is sort of the age profile, if you like, and it feels like a group of players who are kind of ready to achieve good things. And I think I was listening to a podcast about Graeme Souness's time at Liverpool recently, and they were talking about the fact that he, you know, on the team the people look good, but he either had loads of old lads or loads of really young lads, so it was basically Russian Fowler and nothing in between in terms of, whereas for now it feels like they've been quite clever in terms of not who they've brought in, just in terms of the talent, but lads who are ready to go on the next stage of the career. You know, someone like Virgil van Dijk, who's been at Celtic, who's been at Southampton, who's developed as a player, and now he goes to the club where he wins things. And look, it's great that they've managed to persuade players like van Dijk and Alisson recently to kind of join. And it's great that they feel like that's their bit, because they'll be thinking the same. They'll be thinking, I want to be winning stuff. You know, it's not just, you know, Liverpool, we want to win stuff. The players are all the same, and they've chosen Liverpool as the place that they go when they get into the winning things part of their career, and that says a lot too.
Yeah, definitely. When you look at like Van Dijk, Man City could have had him. He could have went and won the league there. You know, really, they'd already won it then, basically. And players like that, like Alisson as well, everyone was after him. For them to come here and they on the outside look at Liverpool and believe in Jürgen Klopp and the setup. They want to, as well, they want to play in this team, and they believe that this team is a team that can win things, because, you know, Virgil van Dijk's probably the best centre-back in the world. I'm putting that out there. And
harsh,
you know,
on Joe Mess, but anyway.
I know, Joe. Joe go. And yeah, no, so basically I think, you know, they wouldn't come here if they didn't think they could win something. He would have went to Man City and won the league, or, you know, so they're here to win, and they're not getting any younger as well, because that's the average, like 25, 26
feels,
or something.
Like that, yeah.
So that, did you say that age, like 26, 27 is for strikers mainly as well, is like the peak sort of performance age, and then obviously you can mature into a fine wine like James Milner. But you know, that this is sort of the moment now. It feels like we've got that team, and we need to do it. Like Josh said, you know, if you'd asked us at the beginning of the season, can we go on and do it? It's like, yeah. And now we're sort of there. It's like Mo said as well, we've kind of just got to take each game as it comes, because we can't really look past anything. You want to get to Maine, just be looking at it and going, oh my God, we've done it, yeah. But we can't. We've just got to enjoy this long international break and just just have little deep breaths, and then, you know, hopefully game by game we get there. Yeah.
That's my advice.
I mean, you mentioned patience earlier, kind of, Josh, and it's funny thinking about 3 years of a manager being at a football club is just the start, because now the average time a manager spends at a football club, I think, is about a year and a half in the Premier League. I mean, Jürgen's probably one of the longest serving managers now, isn't he? In a kind of strange, shorter way. And we're just suggesting, well, this is the start of, you know, the next step. It's almost like a halfway mark. And that's quite nice, isn't it? In a kind of world of, well, a footballing world, if you like, let's forget the other world. It's too horrible. In a kind of footballing world of change, of kind of, well, two bad results and you're out, to be able to just look at a guy and think he's not going to run off at a slightly better opportunity. And also the fact that we know, you know, unless something goes disastrously wrong, that the club aren't going to sack him anyway. And to be able to look at our manager, we've had for 3 years, and go, he's going to be our manager probably for the next three or four, is really nice.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot about the sort of state that the club's in now. I think when you talk about like as bad as it can get, I think we've probably been there. We've probably been on the edge of the cliff when you talk about the Hodgson and the end of the Hicks and Gillette era. So I think what needed to happen, particularly when FSG came in, was just that stability. And I think they sort of knew what they were getting with Klopp. They knew when they employed Klopp that he was a manager who was here for the long term, and he had this project, and he had this sort of modern way of playing, and it made everyone buy into that. But the patience thing's dead interesting, because I feel like we've done the patience. And I feel like Jürgen's almost created his own sort of, like, he's made us impatient by the way that the team's progressed. Because I think he could have almost done it in like a slower way. Like when he first came in, the results were a bit sort of here and there. But then I sort of remember 16, 17 would have been his first full season. And I remember us doing shows and people were talking about, like, can Liverpool challenge for the title? Like, we beat City on New Year's Eve when Ronaldo scored the header, and we're all going, oh, well, that's a good step for us in the title challenge. It's just like, which sounds absolutely mad when you think it's just his first full season, but it's because he's made the team what it is now, and he's made it so great, and he's brought all these great players in, that he's created this thing where Liverpool fans now are going, we know this team's good enough to win, and we know we've got one of the best managers in the world who's set us up for this moment.
Exciting, isn't it?
It really is. I agree with Josh as well. I think that there's a certain relaxation about feeling that, yeah, we know he's definitely going to be there for at least a few more years. Because I know he's kind of made noises about not wanting to kind of, people try to say if he's going to stay as long as Wenger or anything like that. And he's very much of the case of, oh, no, no, no. But I think if you look back at the end of his Dortmund days, there was a little bit of frustration about the fact that his best players were being cherry-picked by their biggest rivals and neighbours. And I think the players got a little bit frustrated with that as well, of him trying to say, it's all right, we can still compete, we can still compete. And they slowly started to lose touch and lose faith in him. I don't really see that happening in Liverpool for the foreseeable future. And I think that's the only reason why he might potentially be tempted elsewhere. So I think we're good.
I don't think there's another Premier League club, was just trying to think, that are so confident in the manager and so like attached, like, but in a really good way. Maybe like City with Guardiola, because Guardiola's a really good football manager. Mm. And then maybe like Bournemouth and Eddie Howe, because he's just been there for ages. And he's, I think he's oddly one of the longest serving Premier League managers.
Definitely is, yeah.
And yeah, so.
Guardiola's a wandering bird though, isn't he? I mean, he said a lot about how,
he's intense, I think, isn't he? So he's so intense in terms of what he asks from his footballers, but also for what he asks for himself.
Yeah.
I think he does have that period that I'm just going to go and get a free 3 or 4 years and then...
And I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, because if you think about, he went to Bayern Munich to win the Champions League and he didn't, but he got to the semi-finals 3 years. They walked the league 3 times. And rather than think, well, we're close, we're in the semi-finals, twice we got beat by the same team, so maybe we can just do it. But no, he was like, no, I'm done with this, I'm ready. So it makes you wonder how long he might stay.
Yeah. Who knows? Would you swap him for anyone else, Josh?
Absolutely not, mate, no.
No?
100%.
I'd love another 10, 20 years if we can get it out.
I can't make Gerrard wait around forever.
No, well, that is true. I like the idea of Klopp outlasting the Anfield rap. I think that'd be something quite nice. But listen, yeah, it's been a fantastic 3 years, but we're all hoping the next 3 are going to be even better, and we've all got a lot of hope here that will happen. But that has been The Weekender. Huge thanks to everyone in the room. Also, make sure you support the Irish Festival, support fantastic football writing like Jonathan Moorcroft's, and support LFC Ladies this weekend or when you're next available. And by Kevin Keegan's book, why not? But we're all still supporting Jürgen Klopp. Doubters to Believers is right.
Sports Social Podcast Network.